outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Tuesday, January the 2nd, 2024, and you are listening to today's early morning edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks, and a very happy new year to all of you. Not that there's a whole lot to be happy about these days with everything that's going on, but I guess the spirit in which I say that is may 2024 be the year that sees, finally, after thousands of years, an end to all of this and the awakening of the people. What I refer to here on this program is the great Gentile awakening that we are trying to effect here on this program and on its accompanying website. May 2024 be the year when people finally do the very simple math on this problem, and that we bring an end to the whole thing. Again, folks, welcome to the program, and I hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, of course, we always have to throw that little caveat into the discussion because we don't wish good on those who are out to destroy us, those who are constitutionally and institutionally driven towards our destruction. It's no different than somebody who is literally, you know, beating the hell out of you, has got a gun to your head, a knife to your throat, and is tying a rope around your neck, and you're just sitting there allowing all of this to happen while blessing this person and wishing them the best. Okay, it runs completely contrary to our natures, our nature of the instincts of self-preservation, of survival. Even worse than that, folks, is if you were to see people who are doing this to your loved ones, you know, your spouse, your children, your grandchildren, friends, extended family members, people who are in the process of doing this to your loved ones, and you're wishing them well and wishing them success in their endeavors. We have to get to this point, folks, where we want to live more then our enemies want to kill us. And until we reach that point, I'm afraid that what we are witnessing now, especially in Gaza, and really for all intents and purposes, folks, everywhere, in every locale, where the leaven of the Pharisees, where the poison of Torah Judaism can be found as the operating system within various countries, especially those countries in the West that claim to be Christian in their orientation. Some version of what is happening in Gaza is happening in each one of those countries. You know, as we have pointed out on this program many, many times, as horrible as the situation is in Gaza, and it is horrible, folks, nevertheless, when we do the numbers on it, and we look at how many people have been killed, Palestinian Gentiles have been killed, not just in Gaza, but, since this whole disaster known as 1948 occurred, meaning the institution of the quote-unquote State of Israel, and not just the Palestinians, but the Lebanese, the Syrians, the people of Iraq, people of Afghanistan, the people of Libya, all of those people whose countries have been destroyed. Nevertheless, when we do the numbers on it, folks, and I'm in no way saying this to in any way degrade or de-emphasize the suffering that's going on, because it is horrible suffering. Nevertheless, when we do the math on all of it, it's actually, the numbers are actually smaller compared to what has happened, for example, here just in the United States, but really throughout the West. You look at how many children have had their bodies, their living bodies, ripped limb from limb through the process known as abortion on demand. Okay. Just here in the United States, somewhere between 60 and 70 million, and they consider that to be a very conservative number. And again, folks, I'm not doing this to delegitimize or de-emphasize or in any way downplay the suffering, the outrage that is taking place right now in Gaza, because it is horrible. But nevertheless, the point here being is that wherever these people go, wherever the wandering Jew happens to land and begins to establish himself and his protocols, meaning his Torah Judaism, in due time, it's the same story over and over and over again. Everywhere they go, they repeat these patterns. These patterns always end up in the same way, which is with the death and destruction of the Gentiles who are living there. And this is what I mean, folks, when we talk about the great Gentile Renaissance that we're trying to bring about with this program, with the message of this program and the message that appears on the website, is for Gentiles to free themselves from this virus of the mind that unfortunately has plagued us now for thousands of years, into thinking that our avowed enemies are just like us. They want the same things that we do, and if we're just nice to them and afford them tolerance, we'll be able to live and to all get along. But that's not the case, folks. It's not the case. This is not the way the Torah Judaism works. It's an all or nothing. It's not a live and let live attitude. It's a live and let die, to borrow a phrase from a movie made a long time ago, a James Bond movie. They're not interested in us living and thriving. They have been commanded by the protocols of their Torah Judaism to destroy us, to destroy everything that lives, to save nothing alive that breathes. And we have talked about this fact on this program for years, folks, and we're going to continue talking about that today. Now, let's see, last week's program was rather short, and the only complaint I received about it was to that effect, folks, that it was too short. It was only 45 minutes. Today will not be the case. It's going to be a much longer program, folks. We have some very important sound bites that we need to cover, some very important concepts that need to be discussed. And I guess in moving forward with this, ladies and Gentile men, as we write it on the website often, Gentile men, that is the origin of the word gentle, gentlemen, whatever, is the quality of being a Gentile, okay, of being gentle, of not being a bandit, not being a pirate, not being a thief, a liar, a murderer, all of these words which Jesus Christ himself used in describing the people who happened to live in that particular part of the world that he lived in during his 33 years. And on that note, folks, you know, last week's program, we did focus on the person and on the teachings of Jesus Christ, specifically using the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, Jesus's words in talking about what these last days would be like. And, you know, we're not bringing this up. We didn't have that discussion for quote-unquote religious reasons, folks. The religions were, yes, they were definitely spiritual in their nature, but in general, they were political, okay? Now, this is one of the fallacies, unfortunately, that a lot of people have bought into, and to our own detriment, which is that Jesus was not interested in the politics of, you know, the mundane politics of human beings, but rather was preaching something higher, you know, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, and all of the rest of that stuff. Well, that's true, folks. Jesus did talk about the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of God. But everything that he said was geared towards creating a smaller and less perfect version of that same kingdom of God here on earth. And of course, the proof of this is in the only prayer that he instructed his followers, which is known as the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer. It is very early here, folks. So if I'm still waking up, you'll please forgive the mispronunciations. And the only prayer that he instructed his followers to pray, the Lord's Prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. There we go. There's the kingdom of heaven. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Okay. So here Jesus is talking about creating this little mini version of that kingdom of heaven here on earth. Okay. In order to make the bridge between this very imperfect and pain-filled life here, to make the bridge between this life and the perfect life in the next world to be as small a bridge as possible, that if people will just, that they are, that we, that his followers are to work towards that, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And you know, as we pointed out on the program last week, folks, part of that process of creating this kingdom of heaven, where we don't see things happening like we are witnessing right now in Gaza or in any other hellhole on the face of the earth right now, folks. You know, there are wars going on all over the place. There are murders going on all over the place. Again, this is not to demean or in any way detract from the horrible suffering that is taking place in Gaza right now. Okay, but, you know, part of the process of creating this kingdom of heaven where these things don't happen anymore means that we have to take the message of Jesus Christ in its total, in its totality. Yes, there are those sections of it, the sugar and spice and everything nice, you know, about love and about forgiveness and all of the rest of that. But then there are the more bitter parts of it, the salty parts of it, and particularly those parts that Jesus left us to consider during the last week of his life when he went to Jerusalem to do battle with the beast, with the kingdom of Satan. And, you know, we point this out on the website often, folks, and literally not a day goes by in which we are not quoting Jesus Christ and what it was that he had to say, the very unflattering and uncomplimentary things that he had to say about the people at that time known as the, whatever we want to call them, the Hebrews, the Israelites, Judeans, Jews, whatever, you know, throughout the metamorphosis of this group of people, they've gone, you know, by different names, no different, folks, than, you know, the stages of gestation that exist, you know, with living with mammals growing within the wombs of their mothers or insects. You know, all of us begin as, it's been about 40 years since I've been in a biology class, but, you know, the fertilized egg, I believe, is called a zygote or a gamete, something like that. And there are these different stages of its development, okay? And then it eventually becomes a fetus, and then it is born and it becomes an infant, okay? It has graduated to that point where in most civilized cultures, you know, it's at least considered a human being. Not here in the United States, folks, this quote-unquote Christian country, you know, where we, because we have been infected with the teachings of Torah Judaism. Notice, folks, I said Torah Judaism, not Talmudic Judaism. They are just two wings on the same vulture. There are certain people, there are a lot of people who have bought into this nonsense that has been promulgated by certain people who earn their living by trying to paint this non-existent distinction between the teachings of the Torah and the teachings of the Talmud. This is the Old Testament, folks. The Torah is the Old Testament. Nevertheless, they are just, one is just an extension of the other. And because of that, because of the Torah teachings of this Torah Judaism, not even children who have been born in this country are considered human beings, not for at least 30 days. This comes right out of the teachings of the Old Testament. And those of you who would like further information on that, just go back and read the website, and you will see myriads of articles written by in some cases, Jewish medical doctors who are highly trained as religious experts as well, and who say that according to Jewish law, a human being, a child, is not even considered a human being after its birth. Anyway, folks, I know I kind of got off the track there for just a moment, but the long and the short of it is that in creating this kingdom of heaven, as Jesus talked about, we have to take the totality of what he said. We can't take just those sweet things dealing with, as I said, compassion, forgiveness, love of fellow man. You know, sometimes, folks, the love of your fellow man requires that you you recognize the danger that enemies pose to your fellow man. So, you know, you cannot have compassion on both of them, okay? If you happen to find yourself in some place here in the United States and some lunatic has decided that he's going to make his stamp on history by going into some very public place with a gun and killing a bunch of innocent people before taking his own life, as is very common now, folks, and you happen to be carrying a firearm of your own, and you're able to stop this thing by shooting this individual and killing him, okay, an act of violence. Nevertheless, folks, it is an act of love that you have just done. Because by killing this one person who's intent upon killing dozens, you have saved the lives of dozens of people. And that's the choice that we really have to make, folks, is who's going to get the compassion. Now, it is a, it unfortunately is a very common thing these days that people want to bring the enemy into the camp at the table of discussion, especially with regards to things like what's going on right now in Gaza. Jews of good conscience, folks, you know, these left-leaning Jews, these hippie Jews, whatever we want to call them, secular Jews, who at least make the pretenses of opposing what's going on, okay? And you know what, folks? As we have said many times in various EdNote commentaries on the web on the website, if they really do feel this way, they are opposed to the killing of innocent people. Great, bravo, clap, clap, clap. However, as we have seen on far too many occasions, oftentimes, this is the trick that they use to get into the conversation and to steer it in ways that, in the end, wind up benefiting the tribe, meaning the tribe of Judah. And, you know, unfortunately, there are just far too many of us folks who fall for this. Take, for example, the circus clowns and the con artists known as Naturi Carta. Okay, they are out there front and center. Okay, you know, they are out there more than people, the Palestinians themselves. You get these bearded, just ridiculously attired Orthodox Jews claiming that authentic Judaism is opposed to what is happening right now in Gaza. And people swallow this. They believe this. And all you have to do is to spend 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, reading what it is that the followers of Judaism themselves have to say on this matter, quoting from books such as Genesis and Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Book of Numbers, Book of Joshua, Judges, okay, and of course the most recent the Book of Samuel, which Benjamin Netanyahu himself quoted. Now, this is important, folks, because this is actually the topic of today's program, which is known as, quote, the conversation, unquote. The conversation is the most important step that is undertaken whenever any big thing is going to be done. It's no different than, you know, the family deciding that they're going to go on a vacation. And they have no real plans as of yet. They pack up the car and they go out of the driveway and then they head down towards the highway, and they have two options. They have the option of going north to someplace up north, or they have the option of going south, turning right, going south, turning left, going north. And obviously, folks, whatever way in which they turn, that's where they're headed. And that's the way that it is with very important things that happen in our world where human activity is involved. And I'm talking about human activity in the along the lines of nation states. Okay, we'll take, for example, 9/11, the terrorist attacks, the Israeli engineered terrorist attacks taking place over 20 years ago. Within literally minutes of that event, folks, the conversation that was immediately started was that it was Islamic terrorists who did this, okay? And because there were no contradictory statements on that in that regard, that became the conversation. And then the conversation, of course, that was added to it is that this is what the religion of Islam teaches. This is what it commands, that they are to slay all of the infidels, especially Christians, even though there's no truth to that whatsoever, folks. The conversation that didn't get started that day, and if it had, and if it had taken on, if it had spread to the degree that it should have, given the seriousness of it, if the conversation that day would have been the arrests of the five dancing Israelis, okay, the five Mossad officers who were taking pictures of the wreckage and cheering, if that had been the conversation that had taken place, if for, I mean, some miracle had taken place, and the same news media that is owned by those pro-Israel, pro-Jewish, and Jewish themselves partisans, if some weird quirk had taken place and they decided to go with that story instead of the notion that Islam is a religion of violence, of conquest, of jihad, and all of the rest of that, well, it's very possible that what happened afterwards with the destruction of Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya, that this would not have taken place. Okay? So it's very important that those of us who consider ourselves, you know, activists or quote unquote truthers, I hate those words, folks, because they have just become so toxic now in today's world because of the baggage that has been attached to it by the likes of Jim Fetzer and Alex Jones and some of these other people who have given such a bad name to the topic of truth. Okay, with the various things that they have peddled. Nevertheless, if it is truly our mission to go out and to fight this battle, wage this war, whatever you want to call it, we have to make sure that the right conversation is taking place. Now, with regards to what's happening right now in Gaza, 30,000 people dead, 10,000 of those are children under the age of 7. And of those 10,000, I believe more than half of them are under the age of 3. With regards to just the situation with Gaza, but certainly we could expand this to include every every massacre that is taking place right now across the globe, where the partisans of the Jewish state, the children of Israel, as they like to refer to themselves, the followers of Torah Judaism, are involved in it. It is being done for religious reasons, folks. Now, it is a very unpopular thing to make this argument these days. Unfortunately, Gentiles, given their natures, their very compassionate natures, they will find one Jew, one Judean, Judite, whatever we want to call them, out of a million, one of them who doesn't or who appears not to have that killer instinct, okay? And they will use that one lone exception to negate what is the very much warranted and generalized rule. And this is just so catastrophically stupid, folks. Because, you know, I saw a video the other day. I don't know why it just popped up in my feed. I guess because our phones and computers are constantly listening to everything we say. It picked up on a conversation that I was having about snakes and vipers and crocodiles and alligators and other dangerous reptiles. Anyway, there was this video of this lunatic who had a pet cobra. Okay, one of the most dangerous snakes in the world, folks. I mean, this isn't like a rattlesnake or any other viper that if it bites you, you've got a little bit of time to get to the hospital to get the anti-venom that you need in order to save your life. I mean, with a cobra, it carries a neurotoxin, so it attacks your nervous system and it shuts down your breathing apparatus. Okay, and you really only have a few minutes. Well, anyway, this lunatic who has several king cobra. It's rather early here, like I said. So he's got a couple of these things, and he just lets them. He lets them loose in his house. King cobras, folks, some of the most dangerous animals in the world. And it showed this one video, you know, snakes. My skin is crawling here, just saying this, folks, because I hate snakes. I just hate them. They shed their skins every year. Anybody who's walked through the woods and has seen a snake skin knows what I'm talking about. And it showed this video of this lunatic. And he's picking off the last remaining, scales or pieces of this snake skin up by the cobra's mouth, right up by its head. I saw another news story the other day. This young woman who lives in Florida, and she has made quite a name for herself. I guess she's got a big following on Facebook or TikTok or whatever. And she collects these pet alligators and crocodiles, which are very prevalent down in Florida. And it shows her, you know, in the area where these things are kept. And she's right in there with them. And which, if that weren't bad enough, she's hugging them. She's kissing them on their noses. Now, in both of these cases, folks, it's just a matter of time before there's going to be a news story saying that the Cobra Man has been bit and is dead. It's just a matter of time before we hear news stories about this young woman in Florida who's the crocodile girl. And, for years she was, you know, friends with these alligators and crocodiles. But then one day the nature of the beast finally had the better of him and he ripped her face off. And likewise, this same type of insanity, folks, unfortunately prevails within the Gentile brain as well with regards to this eternal menace that has been stalking us since the days of Cain and Abel. And one of the reasons why this takes place, folks, is because of the conversation that's taking place. Now, for example, these two lunatics that I just described to you, the Cobra Man and the Alligator Girl, the conversation that's taking place, if you listen to them as they're you know, the one guy's peeling dead skin off of this cobra. And the other conversation with the alligator girl, she's talking about how they are her sweethearts. And they're just big, how did she describe it? The kind of thing that you might say for a puppy or a kitten or something like that, but certainly not for an alligator. Those are the conversations that are taking place. And, you know, for the moment, while these expositions are occurring, you know, this guy's peeling the skin off this cobra's face and this young lady is kissing this alligator on its snout, the conversation seems to mesh. It seems to agree with what you're seeing there at the moment, okay, at that moment. But that's not the reality of it, folks. That's the exception. The reality is that that cobra is institutionally and constitutionally driven to bite you and kill you. The reality of the alligator, the crocodile, is that it's institutionally and constitutionally instinctively driven to rip your arm off and to eat you. Arms, all of your arms and legs. The fact that they haven't done it yet does not mean that the nature of the thing has changed. It just means that at that particular moment, it's not taking place. And unfortunately, folks, this same type of mentality is what has brought our world to the precipice of its ultimate destruction where we find ourselves today. And the reason that we have brought ourselves to this place is because of those conversations that were begun thousands of years ago. And particularly with regards to the West, okay, that is the inheritor of Christian civilization, the moment that somebody got the idea of putting the person of Jesus alongside the person of Moses, the way that we would put George Washington alongside the person of, Benjamin Netanyahu, okay? Two completely different human beings, completely different natures. At that point, what we see taking place now became an absolute inevitability. And on that note, folks, we're going to pursue this topic with our very first soundbite of the day. And I don't know where it comes from, folks. It was part of a YouTube video that I happened to run into. But it's very telling. It's very disturbing. But it provides a good segue into the rest of this discussion that we're going to have. So let's just sit back here for just a small moment of time and get a load of this.
Israel should make the Gaza Strip a parking lot by this time next week. Destroy the whole thing and get a great big missile and blow that wicked Dome of the Rock plumb off of the spot where it's standing right now, so we can get that third temple rebuilt and usher in the coming of Jesus.
One more time, folks, just for emphasis. One more time, because I know a lot of you out there, hopefully all of you out there, are sitting there right now with your mouth open and your eyes are not blinking, and you're thinking maybe that this was a scene from, a Saturday Night Live thing or something like that. No, it's the real deal, folks. We're going to listen to it again.
Israel should make the Gaza Strip a parking lot by this time next week. Destroy the whole thing and get a great big missile and blow that wicked Dome of the Rock plumb off of the spot where it's standing right now, so we can get that third temple rebuilt and usher in the coming of Jesus.
Yeah, folks, like I said, I don't know where this is taking place. The video itself shows some lunatic Christian Zionist preacher, obviously. And he's in his church, which for all intents and purposes, folks, is really not a church dedicated to Jesus Christ. It's a synagogue, and it's dedicated to the teachings of Moses. Because that's what he's talking about there when he's talking about turning Gaza and its 2 million inhabitants, half of whom are children, okay? what he's talking about here is this giant late-term abortion and killing all of these people, not something Jesus Christ would have supported. But certainly was supported by Moses, because the great lawgiver Moses, at least as he is painted within the pages of the Old Testament or the Torah, whatever you want to call it, this is exactly what he commanded be done, to save nothing alive that breathes. So, and again, folks, getting back to this topic known as the conversation, okay, what you just heard and what is taking place today, which is just an extension of what you just heard, this is the consequence of the wrong conversation being started at the beginning of it, okay? The right conversation 2,000 years ago, folks, which did get started but which was quickly squelched out, was that the person of Jesus and the person of Moses have no place together in the same philosophical realm, okay? That the God that Jesus worshipped, meaning God the Father, was not the God that Moses worshipped, this God that instructed him to instruct the pirates under his command to go and to slay everything. And again, folks, as we've said many times, that this, what you just heard, with regards to this, this is just a validation of what Jesus said when he warned that no one can serve two masters, that he will either hate the one and love the other, or he will love the one and hate the other. And what I would put to all of you today, folks, is that the, you know, we hear all about these terrorist organizations. Certainly Israel is a terrorist state. Its government is a terrorist entity. Its military is a terrorist entity. But the largest terrorist entity in the world right now, folks, is represented by people like what you just heard in that soundbite. The Christian world that either supports what is happening or passively allows it to happen, or even, folks, the Christian world that helped to bring this about by mixing the person of Jesus and the person of Moses together. This represents the most dangerous terrorist organization in human history. Okay. And I know that this is kind of a little bit off the topic, folks, but this is the reason why, you know, hear a lot of commentary, half-baked commentary from people saying that, you know, the Donald Trump, you know, that he went too far in trying to appease Israel, and, you know, they use the various things that he did in this regard as proof, quote unquote, that that he was out to make Israel great again, and that and all of the rest of that. But that's not really what Trump was worried about. He was more worried about that base here in the United States, the largest voting bloc in the country, made up of these completely irrational religious terrorists known as evangelical Christians. And that's exactly what they are, folks. As much as we want to blame the Jews for doing what they do, the fact of the matter is that the ones who really deserve the indictment are the Christians. Are the Christians who have the choice between choosing Jesus or choosing Moses, and instead they choose Moses while thinking all along by doing so that they are choosing Jesus as well, but they're not. Whereas with the Jews who have rejected Jesus from the very beginning, to a certain extent, folks, they are less to blame. Again, going back to, you know, what we were talking about before with the gal with the alligators, okay? When it transpires, and I'm sure that it will, when we get news stories that some alligator has ripped her face off or her arms and legs or all of the above, she has nobody to blame for that but herself. She can't blame the alligator. The alligator is doing exactly what it is institutionally and constitutionally and instinctively driven to do. It's her own fault because she actually bought into this notion that she could tame these beasts and make them pets. And that's one of the things that, as part of, you know, what we do here, folks, is we have to get to the heart of the matter. And the heart of the matter on this is that until the Gentile world decides to deal rationally and factually with this race of crocodilia and alligators in our midst, and to deal rationally with the instincts that drive them in their behavior, things like Gaza and the coming apocalypse, which these people are planning to bring to all of us, are an inevitability. Now, on that note, folks, we're going to move on to a couple of other important sound bites. If you haven't yet, folks, and I'll admit, you know, I'm late to the game on this. If you haven't yet found Judge Andrew Napolitano on YouTube, look him up. He's got some really good programs. He is striking as close to the bullseye as I have seen out there. With regards to public figures, he's not afraid to deviate from the, you know, the accepted position that Israel's waging a war of self-defense. He's actually pretty good. And one of his recent programs he had on Professor Jeffrey Sachs, who I'm sure, folks, is of the Hebraic pedigree. He doesn't act like it. He certainly doesn't think like one. And he had some very interesting things to say, which are going to form the basis of the rest of the conversation. So let's just sit back here and give it a listen, folks.
In other words, the entire world, other than the United States and Israel, are aghast at what's happening. This has its own profound significance. The United States stands completely isolated globally for supporting Israel in this massacre. And the consequences of that are being felt all over the world in shifting alliances, in economic patterns, in changing geopolitical structures, even in the use of the dollar as currency and many other things. There is a seismic change of geopolitics underway in which the U.S. has chosen nearly total isolation in the world. I see it every day because my job is to be out in the world discussing issues of economic development and finance, the global economy, trade, the currency system. And what's happening is the U.S., so contrary to being what Biden in his fantasy thinks that the world looks to the U.S. for leadership, the world looks at the U.S. aghast. The U.S. stands alone with Israel. Of course, the world's even more aghast at what Israel is doing because we haven't had the real-time video feed of mass slaughter quite this way before. Of course, we've had war in our living rooms, on our social media or television broadcasts, but the real-time slaughter, and as President Erdogan said, of hospitals and schools, I would add mosques, apartment buildings, this is an attempt stated by the Israelis, although we don't want to hear it, so we try not to hear the actual words that are used, but to make Gaza uninhabitable. And that's got a purpose that also needs to be understood. Israel is not fighting Hamas. Israel is fighting for a greater Israel, which is a kind of messianic, biblical idea that now is in political ascendancy in Israel, that Israel has the right to control all of the area. It has the right to control the millions and millions of Palestinians because some zealots believe, and they are powerful right now, God said so in the book of Joshua, sometime around the 5th century BC. And you can't really make this up because this is 21st century stuff, and right. It's devastating. And this is what we're siding with. I don't think Americans really understand what is motivating the Israelis. I don't think Americans understand the risk of this war widening very significantly, very dangerously, and very fast. But this is what we're up against. And unfortunately, we have a president who's not effectively a president. I don't know what he is, but it's the worst foreign policy imaginable right now.
Okay, folks, so that was Professor Jeffrey Sachs. Again, I'm pretty sure, folks, he's of the Hebraic origin, but nevertheless, he basically lays it out, and he says specifically, you know, and this is the part that we want to focus on here, is that Israel's not, the Jews are not fighting Hamas. They are fighting for this thing known as Greater Israel. Now, of course, where Professor Sachs, and this is not in any way intended to be negative criticism towards him, he sees this as just being an issue with the Palestinians, okay? But when we're talking about Greater Israel, folks, okay, the greater part of that Greater Israel is the rest of the Middle East, okay? It's Palestine today. But according to the teachings of Moses, it means everything between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers, as explicitly laid out in multiple places in that same Torah or Old Testament, which certain quote-unquote experts among us claim no longer plays any part in what's going on today in with regards to modern Jewry. What he says is that this is a very powerful group of religious zealots. It's a very loaded word in and of itself, folks, zealot, because the zealots were a very particular group of Jewish terrorists and assassins who, during the time of the Roman occupation of Judea, they would assassinate other Jews who were seen as being complicit, or they were seen as collaborators with the Romans. And if we really want to get honest about it, folks, the zealots, even though they weren't called it at the time, these were the same Maccabees who fought against the Greek occupation of Judea prior to the Romans being there. So we're talking about the same species of alligator, folks. They've changed names. They started off as Maccabees. Then they became zealots. Now they're known as Likud, okay? But it's the same idea. It's the same mentality. He goes on to say that this all comes from the book of Joshua. And that's true, folks. It does come from the book of Joshua. Joshua was Moses' right-hand man, his most important general. And Joshua is the one who received the orders from Moses to take this army of pirates, Judaic pirates, whatever we call them, Hebraic, Israelite, Judean pirates, into these various villages and cities and towns, and to slaughter everything that lives, kill everything, to save nothing alive that breathes. And Professor Sachs says, you know, we can't make this stuff up. And very ominously as well, folks, he ends his comments by saying, Americans don't understand, you know, what's really going on here. You know, this thing that we are supporting. He doesn't understand the risk of this widening in a very quick and in a very dangerous fashion. And he's absolutely right, folks. And the reason why Americans are not aware of this is because of the nature of the conversation that's taking place at any given moment. Now, the war coming up on the third month anniversary of October 7th is just a few days away. You know, the conversation that was immediately begun after that day's events was that, Hamas terrorists, not soldiers or freedom fighters, crossed into Israel and engaged in a military operation aimed at, freeing their land from these illegal immigrants. Let's just call them what they are, folks. They are an invading army of illegal immigrants. who have been perpetrating just the most horrific crimes against innocent Gentile civilians now for close to a century. Instead, the conversation, just like on 9/11, it became one of Islamic terrorism, and that this is what has been guiding basically American political and domestic support. I say political meaning at the governmental level, domestic meaning the your neighbors, your family members, people at your church, folks. That's actually the most important place, more than government support for what Israel's doing. Yes, Israel needs all of those bombs and all of the bullets, the spare parts for her tanks and her helicopters and all the rest of that in order to kill these people. But it's the domestic support as found within the Christian churches, folks, that is the real lifeblood that makes sure that that government support remains intact. Now, some of you are saying, well, I haven't heard any of this. I go to, let's say, for example, folks, like in my case, I go to a Roman Catholic mass that's said in Latin, and they haven't discussed any of that. Well, okay, folks, maybe they haven't. Maybe you have not heard the kinds of things that you heard a few moments ago when this lunatic in one of these Christian Zionist churches, synagogues, actually is a better word to use, folks. Maybe you haven't heard that kind of stuff. But if your priest or your bishop or your preacher or pastor, whatever we want to call them, hasn't come out and said, look, this is a religious war that is being fought because the people who are doing this, who are slaughtering all of these people in Gaza, including many Christians, you know, there was a story just a week or so ago about a mother and her daughter who were gunned down by an Israeli sniper, two Catholic Palestinians. If your priest or preacher or pastor or whatever is not saying that this is a religious war and that it is being fought exactly as Professor Sachs just described, that it's a religious war that's based upon the teachings of the Old Testament, then yes, folks, they are contributing to that quote-unquote domestic support that is necessary if that political support that shows itself in, you know, these huge shipments of guns and bombs and everything else being sent to Israel by the government of the United States, then they are complicit in that. Okay. Again, folks, the problem is that nobody's willing to have that conversation, or very few are willing to have that conversation, even after Netanyahu himself said so in the plainest of words just shortly after this massacre began, when he quoted the book of Deuteronomy and when he quoted the book of Samuel talking about wiping out Amalek. Every man, woman, and suckling child, what Netanyahu told the entire world is that this is a Jewish war being fought according to the precepts and the protocols and principles of Torah Judaism. And Netanyahu having said that, now, folks, that gives us the green light and the permission to have that conversation within exactly that context. But the problem is that no one is having that conversation. You know, what is going on right now is just a continuation of what has been happening for the last century. It's the same stories being recycled over and over and over again. The Jews go into a place full of innocent civilians. They kill a bunch of civilians. They steal the land. Isn't that horrible? And then it goes no further than that. They don't take it to the next level that it needs to go to if this thing ever stands a snowball's chance in hell of actually being stopped. Now, on that note, folks, we're going to actually get to the main discussion today. Yes, we're almost an hour into the program and we're just getting started. But what you're about to hear, folks, is going to, underscore the importance of having conversations like this. Conversations that unfortunately, folks, you're not likely to hear really anywhere else. And I don't say that in the spirit of boasting or anything like that, folks. I say that in a spirit of profound regret that this conversation is not taking place in other places as it should, okay, because it really, really needs to. We're going to have this conversation about this this alligator in the room, this giant alligator in the room known as Judaism. And we can only continue going on with this Zionism discussion and, you know, the equal, just the ridiculous pairings. You know, Judaism isn't Zionism and Zionism isn't Judaism. At some point, folks, at some point, we're going to have to discuss the ugly truth of the matter, which is that Judaism is the problem. It is the problem. Now, today's, soundbite, the third soundbite for today's program, folks, features this horrible, horrible rabbi. His name is Yaron Reuven, and he bounces back and forth between Jerusalem and New York City, and he's got his own YouTube channel, and he's always giving these discussions on the Torah and what the Torah, meaning the Old Testament, what it teaches about various things. He's a hideous sight to see, folks. And when I say that, what I mean is, and I'll include a link, to the YouTube video where this little discussion appeared today. Watch his eyes. If there was ever a case to be made that when Jesus talked about the rabbis, the Jews in general, the rabbis in particular, being children of their father, the devil, okay, if there was ever a case to be made that Jesus was not being figurative when he said that, certainly the person of this horrible Rabbi Yaron Reuven could be used as Exhibit A in saying that in this case Jesus was not speaking in parables, that he was being literal when he talked about these people being children of their father, the devil. Now, the lesson, the classroom discussion, I have cut it short, folks. Those of you who want to listen to the bulk of it on the YouTube link that I'll provide, you should fast forward it to around the 36-minute mark. This particular piece runs 13 minutes, and we're going to play it in its entirety, and then we're going to begin the business of unpacking it. That's a word that was used in another Torah discussion of this type. But anyway, folks, I want you to listen very carefully to what he says. And I want you, after hearing this, to think about what you have been told by the likes of Naturi Karta and Jewish Voice for Peace and who the Pink People, what are they, Code Pink, and all of these other Jewish organizations who say that the Zionists have hijacked Judaism and that they're using the peaceful teachings of Judaism, the humanitarian, the compassionate teachings of Judaism, that they're taking them out of context and perverting them for their political ends. I want you to listen for yourself, folks. I want you to engage your critical thinking abilities that are given to us as a gift by our Creator. And I ask you to begin deprogramming yourself of all of these very, very carefully constructed mind viruses that have been put on our collective hard drive, mental hard drive, that have basically paralyzed and immobilized us from understanding the nature of this monster that we are dealing with.
There are also different types of stupid, ignorant people in the world, and saying that the counterattack is too harsh. And one of the things that everyone likes to mention, and I've got this question several times, a couple times today, and certainly beforehand, is that the counterattack by the Israeli soldiers and the Air Force and so on is not only killing the enemy, that's the people that raped, murdered, and tortured our people, but also it's killing children. It's killing children. And of course, every time there's a child that's killed at war, they, you know, get the camera crew to make sure to record it and put it on camera and get the guy to run back and forth with the child as if he doesn't know where he's going. So the question that we're going to, Be'ezrat Hashem, answer tonight is, what is the Torah's perspective about children being killed at war? What are the rules of war? Do we have to be careful to shoot only the enemy, that's the adult? Do we have to do a repentance for killing children? Is it okay to kill children? So it's time we actually understood, what is the Torah's perspective? What is the Torah's perspective? And we're talking about a scholarship perspective. I'm not telling any of you to go out there and start hurting anybody. There's war, and then there is every one of you that's watching. That's civilians, regular people, some of you terrorists that are making comments. And it's important for a person to know the background. The background of all of this, and understand where the Torah is coming from. Now, of course, we all know, whether you're a Jew, Gentile, but you believe in the Torah, you know, like the Christians claim to and the Muslims claim to as well, you understand that the Torah is the Word of God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us clear instructions in his written and oral Torah of what to do, how to do it, when we are supposed to have mercy, when we are forbidden from having mercy. And this also includes many of the prophecies about the end of days, where we find ourselves now, where it appears to be a possibility, as we've mentioned already several times this week, the beginning of Gog and Magog, the beginning of the last war. Whether it is the beginning or not, we cannot be sure, but certainly it is something bigger than what we've seen any time in recent history. Now, the war of Gog and Magog is prophesied in countless places in the Torah. The prophet Jeremiah mentions it. In chapter 30, the prophet Isaiah mentions it in countless places. The prophet Zechariah mentions it, chapter 14, and Ezekiel mentions it in a chapter 37 and 38. I believe there's also in 32. The point is that there's a lot of stuff that's actually mentioned in the Torah about this Gog and Magog. This is part of the Tanakh. This is part of the prophecies. This is not a something that is a recent invention in any way. And certainly this war is going to be the war of all wars. And as we said, the sages teach us that initially Israel is going to be tormented. We're going to discuss by who in a moment. Edom is going to come and help them. That's going to start a fight with Ishmael and Edom, but not a regular fight, rather a spiritual fight where they're going to fight for the sake of their spiritual beliefs. And but then they're going to both turn on Israel because they want possession and ownership of Jerusalem. Now the question is asked, fine, we understand that there is horrible things that happened, but what is the fault now that you're attacking back? Now that the Jewish people are attacking back to at least a certain extent, they reported maybe 6,000 bombs thrown on the Gaza over there. I'm surprised it's only 6,000. It should have simply been just one. But the point is that people are asking, fine, they did bad things, this thousands of terrorists that infiltrated the country. beat the system, what is the fault of the civilians, and especially the babies, the children that are being killed by some of these bombs, that are being killed by some of these bullets? Says David HaMelech, says David HaMelech, David HaMelech tells us in Psalms chapter 137, verse 9, David HaMelech tells us the rules of war. Ashrei Shalem Lach et Gmulech Shegamalt Lanu Ashrei Shiochaz Venipetz et Olalaich El Sela. O violated daughter of Babylon, praiseworthy is he who repays you in accordance with the manner that you treated us. Praiseworthy is he who will clutch and dash your infants against the rock. Says David the Melech, the tormentors of the Jewish people, the torturers of the Jewish people, not just the Babylonians, not just the Assyrians, not just the Spaniards or the Nazis, but especially so in the last generation, the Ishmaelim. We will have our day where we will praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu when He takes the infants and smashes their heads against the rocks, as they did to us. Meaning that David HaMelech, Beruach HaKodesho, told us that during war there is no mercy. When you are fighting an enemy, there is no mercy. As the rule of the Torah is, Kol HaMerachem Al HaAchzarim Sofo LitAchzer Al Rachmanim. Anyone who is merciful over vicious people ultimately will become vicious towards merciful people. There is no permission from the Torah to have any mercy whatsoever during war. Not on children, not on women, not on anybody. Why? Because if a person understands what is war and why you're fighting, you'll understand that by being merciful on the vicious, you will eventually become vicious on the merciful. But how does that work? One of the stories that was publicized and then republicized recently that shows this proof of the Torah's divinity come to life in a horrific way is that some time ago, there was a video that was publicized of Jewish soldiers flying in the middle of a special mission, and you hear the guy that the pilot telling the base that he has a target, but then he identified that it was a group of children, 3-4 children. Should I shoot them? Should I not? He says, he doesn't get the answer, and then shortly later, you see him fly away, and he says, I let them go. I didn't do anything. And this was publicized and celebrated of how humane the Israeli army is. Wow! Now if the story would have ended there, then we wouldn't have even mentioned it. Unfortunately, what ended up happening is that those three children, those three Ishmaelim, grew up and got the Ishmaeli education. The Ishmaeli education that tells you that murdering and raping Jewish people is what you're supposed to aim for. That's their ideology. And those Ishmaeli kids grew up to become adults that were terrorists. Terrorists that ended up raping and killing Jewish men and women. They are the ones that showed up. They showed up during this attack. This is the reason, Rabotai Yekarim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says during war, there is no mercy. You may think you're being merciful to a child, but you're not being merciful to the child. You're being vicious to the ultimate victim that this child will grow up and kill. Because the ideology that that child will grow up with is even worse than the ideology of his father. Hence the reason why the Torah in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, verse 16, says, rules of war, Lo techaye kol neshama, do not allow anyone to remain alive. Nothing. No mercy. Furthermore, the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 25, verse 19, Macho et zecher Amalek, completely erase any memory of Amalek, which means men, women, and children, the Torah says, do not have the right to exist once we're at war. And the reality is that people think, well, it's only a baby. To you, it's only a baby. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the before, the during, and the after, the past, present, and the future, gave us a holy Torah that takes everything into consideration. It says that if you do not follow my Torah precisely, you will eventually suffer. There was a Rav Kahana that mentioned these words of the Torah years ago, and people called him a fanatic because he's following the Torah that's older than any law book out there in the world. They called him a fanatic, but today they realize that he is right. More than ever, they realize that he was right. The reality is, Rabotai, that these terrorists weren't born today. They have been groomed for decades. And the world not only remained silent, but actually supported them.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. You heard it. Those are the words of Rabbi Aaron Reuven. As I said, I will include a link to the original YouTube video on this program once it's posted so that you can get the visual included within that. It's really something, folks. Like I said, you need to look at his eyes when he is speaking. And you will see for yourself why yours truly maintains that when Jesus Christ was talking about the rabbis of his day and referred to them as children of their father, the devil, that in this case, Jesus was not speaking in parables, but indeed was speaking literally. So folks, we're going to deconstruct, we're going to unpack what it is that our rabbi has said here within the span of, let's see, about 13 minutes. And we're going to plug it all into what we're witnessing now. He says many things in here that all of us should be taking with the utmost deadly seriousness, folks, because what he's talking about here, when he's talking about war. Yes, he frames all of this within the context of what's going on in Gaza right now. But really, folks, what he's talking about is the war against all Gentiles. All Gentiles. Okay. Because this is the nature of Judaism itself. It is at war with all forms of Gentile life, Gentile civilization, Gentile thought. Okay, as we said earlier in the program, it is not a live and let live ideology. It is an ideology of conquest. It's an ideology of, of utter destruction, folks, just as the rabbi said, and doing so with no mercy. Now, the reason that this is important, some people say, oh, yeah. Okay, the ramblings of one lone rabbi, in New York, you know, how do we generalize this? Well, folks, we generalize it, first of all, because he's not the only one. Yes, you have those nice rabbis out there within within conservative Judaism, within Reform Judaism, And, you know, they hide their fangs very well, folks. They either file them down or they wear dentures so that they, when they smile, they appear like the rest of us, rather than as the vampires that they actually are. But when you actually look at the text that unites them all, the religious text, it remains the same. I mean, it really is no different if you take, again, you take some DNA from, you go to the zoo and there's 20 different alligators there of various species and sizes, and you take a DNA sampling from each one and you put it under the microscope, you will find small variations, but in general, that DNA is the same. Okay. So those nice Jews, those Jews of good conscience on the left, the peaceful Jews, the Naturi Carta types, and the pink, sorry, I keep getting this wrong, the Code Pink, and all of these other groups, okay, from a Gentile perspective, yeah, folks, they say that they're opposed to the carnage taking place in Gaza, but then when you pursue, you know, the rest of the story as far as they're concerned, you find out that they support things that are even more bloodthirsty and savage than what's going on in Gaza, if such a thing is even possible. Yes, folks. I mean, look, there are 30,000 people who have lost their lives by being ripped to pieces, with these bombs that have been dropped on their homes in Gaza. But just here in the United States, 30,000 innocent people being ripped limb from limb is what takes place in just 1 week. In America within those abortuaries that were legally installed because of those same leftist Jews who today are protesting the war in Gaza. Okay, so the reason that this little sermon is important, folks, is that it is putting the Jewish brain under the microscope and explaining why the Jews as a people behave the way that they do. And again, folks, I have to emphasize this because the conversation that should be taking place isn't, and the conversation that shouldn't be taking place is. Now, amongst those of us in the quote-unquote truth movement, or the Jew-wise movement, whatever we want to call it, there is a distressingly high percentage of people who unfortunately have adhered themselves to the writings and the opinions of quote-unquote, not quote-unquote, I'll go ahead and take the quotes off of the word researcher because I do believe that he is a good researcher, Michael Hoffman, when it comes to the Talmud. However, his assertions, which are many and which are invariable, that the Torah plays no part in understanding, explaining, driving Jewish behavior today, especially in Gaza, just is simply not true, folks. It's simply not true at all. And we have it from no less an authority than this stinking bearded rabbi, Aaron Reuven himself. How many times did you hear within the context of this discussion where he's talking about not just the permissibility, folks, let's capitalize that word, permissibility. Okay. Not just the permissibility of killing innocent women and children, but the commandment also in capitals, folks, where he is talking about this and he is citing books like Deuteronomy. He's citing books like Psalms. He's citing individuals like Moses and King David. That's, and I should have warned you ahead of time, folks. I apologize as well, that you would be assaulted with Hebrew by hearing him because he uses a lot of Hebrew, which I consider to be, quite frankly, folks, and I'm saying this as somebody who has a very deep appreciation for foreign languages. I love foreign languages. I do believe that Hebrew is an evil tongue. I think that it emanates from some dark place in the universe. And so when he's saying David Melech, you know, he's talking about King David and all of these other things. You know, I don't know about you folks, but it makes my skin crawl. Okay, it makes my skin crawl no different than when I was watching the Cobra Man peeling dead skin off of the face right next to the mouth and the fangs of that cobra. It just makes my skin crawl. Anyway, so this is important, folks. If we're going to solve this problem, what it requires is us having the right conversation, and it requires us to abandon having the wrong conversation. In this case, the right conversation is that Jewish bloody barbaric behavior is driven by the teachings of their Torah, their Old Testament, and that, yes, while the Talmud is a horrible book, it is merely an extension, a new and improved version of those original teachings as they appear in the Torah. Now, he also talks about, I'm going to quote him, this also includes many of the prophecies about the end of days where we find ourselves now, where it appears to be possibility, as we've mentioned already several times this week, the beginning of the war between Gog and Magog. And he talks about these prophecies regarding this last war, folks, that are it's very important for us to understand, okay? From the prophet Jeremiah, he mentions. He mentions the prophet Zechariah. He mentions Ezekiel. He mentions Isaiah, okay? Now, unfortunately, folks, for 2,000 years, the followers of Jesus have used these prophecies that this rabbi is mentioning here, talking about this last war, this great war that is going to bring the Jewish Messiah to the forefront of all world affairs. And it's going to be a period that, according to these same prophets, is going to see 2/3 of all life on earth wiped out. Unfortunately, for 2,000 years, folks, Christians have misappropriated, misunderstood, and misapplied the teachings in these various quote-unquote prophecies to foretell of the arrival of Jesus Christ. And as we have explained on previous programs, folks, when you actually go back, and you read these prophecies, you will see for yourself that they have nothing to do with the person of Jesus Christ whatsoever. These prophecies describe a bloodthirsty warlord, no different than Moses was, no different than Joshua was, no different than David was, okay, who is out to establish a Jewish supremacist theocratic empire throughout the world. We quoted on several previous programs that specific prophecy, quote-unquote, of Isaiah, that Netanyahu and other religious leaders, not just religious, political leaders in Israel are quoting a lot these days, where it talks about how the wealth of the Gentiles is going to be brought to the feet of the Jewish people, and how the kings of the Gentile are going to be led in humble procession before the Jews, and how any nation that dares to stand up against Israel, that will not bow down before Israel, will be annihilated and utterly destroyed. Okay. Now, again, folks, this is very important because the based upon the conversation that takes place, this is going to decide the direction of very, very important things that are going to follow afterwards, not the least of which is apocalyptic war. Okay, let's see. He talks about the, then he gets into the discussion about killing children. And he says, quite passively, I guess you would say it, he says they reported maybe 6,000 bombs thrown on Gaza. He says, I'm surprised it was 6,000. It should have been just one. Now, we all know what he's talking about there, folks. He's talking about using a nuclear weapon to mass murder over 2 million people. Supposedly because of what the fighters of Hamas did on October 7th. Now, again, folks, some of you out there are saying, all right, well, this is just one deranged rabbi. That's his opinion. It doesn't represent, the rest of the group. Wrong, folks. Incorrectamundo, as Arthur Fonzarelli used to say on Happy Days. Incorrectamundo. He's just one of many religious leaders, religious and political leaders, that have been saying this not just since October 7th, but who have been saying this since Israel's birth, that everybody needs to be incinerated. And the reason that this is important, folks, is because going back to these same prophecies that this bearded, smelly rabbi is referencing here, whether it's Jeremiah, whether it's Ezekiel, Isaiah, you go back and you read the prophecies, and what does it talk about? It talks about the descendants of Esau, okay, in the Bible, folks, in the Old Testament, not in the Talmud, but in the Old Testament, Amalek is the grandson of Esau. Amalek, who they have been required, whom the followers of Judaism are required to utterly destroy down to the suckling infant. The prophecies talk about how Jacob, okay, and remember, folks, today's Jews trace their lineage back to Jacob, how Jacob's descendants are going to incinerate, they're going to set Esau on fire. This is going back to the story of Jacob and Esau that we covered in a previous program. How the descendants of Jacob are going to set the descendants of Esau on fire and are going to destroy Esau so that there's nothing left of him, none of his descendants. So when you have people such as this rabbi talking about using a nuclear weapon against the people of Gaza, he's talking about using nukes against the people of Gaza today. Okay. But the rest of that unfinished sentence is that this is what is coming for all Gentiles, especially those of the West who are considered by today's Jews to be the descendants of Esau. That according to their prophecies, okay, the same prophecies, folks, again, going back to, you know, this historically bad decision 2,000 years ago to include the teachings of Moses and all of the rest of these insane Hebrews in with the teachings of Jesus Christ, the same quote-unquote prophecies that the Jews have written, the Hebrews, Israelites, whatever, they have written for themselves as a recipe book for what they plan to do with the eventual destruction of all Gentile civilization. Okay. Okay. So, and again, folks, here he quotes when he starts talking about David Melech, it's King David, talks about, the book of Psalms. Now, I find this particularly galling, folks, and hopefully someday you will as well. But you hear this crap all the time. Whatever church that you're in, whether it's a Protestant church, whether it's an evangelical Christian Zionist church, whether it's a Catholic church, okay, even a traditional Latin Mass Catholic church, such as attended by yours truly, that there's always some reference to the Book of Psalms, okay, as if it were this peaceful, godly book, and it's not, folks. Here the rabbi is quoting, and he's using this, David's own words, because David is the one credited with writing the book of Psalms, where he's talking about how those who take the children, the innocent children, of those who have been the enemies of the Jewish people, that how those who take those children, seize them and bash their heads against the rocks, how they are righteous and that they are blessed for doing this. Okay. Now, what I find particularly relevant about that, folks, is that in all of the news stories that we see coming out of Gaza right now, and you see all the pictures of the destruction, the rubble, the concrete and the rock that has just, and 7,000 minimum, folks, 7,000 people whose dead bodies are still left under all of that rubble. And the world is saying, how can this be rational? How can they, you know, how can a war be fought this way where they're just destroying all of these buildings? Well, folks, they're doing this because this is what it says in the book of Psalms. Blessed is he who snatches your children and dashes their brains out against the rocks. Is that not what has been happening now for 3 months as these bloodthirsty savages, these bandits and these pirates have been destroying all of these buildings made of stone that has crushed the heads and the bodies of these innocent little children. Again, folks, this ain't coming from the Talmud. So he goes on to say that during war, there is no mercy. When you're fighting an enemy, there is no mercy. Now pay close attention to that, folks. You know, we in the Gentile world, we view war as this thing where two countries, they suit up, they get on their uniforms, they get their equipment, they meet in some place, and they go to battle against each other. This is not how the Jews view this, folks. They have been in a state of war with the rest of us, again, as I said earlier, since the days of Cain and Abel. They have been stalking us and plotting our destruction for the last 3,000 plus years. There's never been a moment since these people landed on this planet after being expelled from whatever corner of the universe they were in, okay, as they have been expelled from every other place that they've gone. There has not been a moment in that 3,000 plus year history where there has not existed this war. The problem is that we do not recognize this to be the case. Okay. We see these individual acts of criminality, of chicanery, of dishonesty, theft, and all of the rest of that have been historically associated with their behavior towards us as just individual criminal acts, folks, but that's not the case. It is all part and parcel of this war that has existed on their part towards us from the very beginning. And this, again, folks, this is the problem that we run into. This is the conversation that we're not having. And going back to what Professor Sachs said before, he said something very interesting that I'm just going to, point out here very quickly, folks. He said that we don't want to hear the words. The words are there, but we don't want to hear them. And he's exactly right, folks. Okay. The words are there, whether they're spoken words, whether they're written words, whether the words are being manifested in real actions that we're watching take place right now. They are there in all of their plain and simple and incontestable truthfulness, but we don't want to pay any attention to it. So he goes on to say, there is no permission from the Torah to have any mercy whatsoever, not during war. Not on children, not on women, not on anybody. Why? Because if a person understands what war is and why you're fighting, you'll understand that by being merciful towards the vicious, that you will eventually become vicious towards the merciful. And then he goes on to quote, again, folks, not from the Talmud. He quotes from the Torah, the Old Testament, book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, and book of Deuteronomy, chapter 25. And again, folks, it's right there, crystal clear. It doesn't need any interpretation, doesn't need any context. When it says, save alive nothing that breathes, it's clear what they're talking about. Now, very quickly, we're just going to revisit something that he said that is very profound that all of us have to take to heart as we move forward during these days that are going to become more difficult and more dangerous with each passing day, folks. When he says that by being merciful towards the vicious, you will eventually become vicious towards the merciful. He's absolutely right, folks, but in a reverse sense. This tendency on the part of Gentiles to be merciful towards Jews, to see them as one of us, to see them as sharing our same values, of seeing them as part of, you know, and their religion is one of the great religions of the world. Okay. by affording them that mercy, like affording the crocodile or the alligator or the cobra snake that mercy that you would afford to a kitten or to a puppy or a parakeet or something like that. By bringing that alligator into your home or that cobra into your home, besides the danger that you're putting yourself in, you're also doing it to those who happen to live in the home with you. Okay? And likewise, by being merciful to these people, for whatever reason, whether it's because, as in the case of the Christian Zionists, they worship the Jews, they have traded in Jesus for Moses, or whether it's, you know, those less rabid and raging lunatic Christians who take at face value some of the things that seem to appear in the New Testament that paint Moses and all of these warlords in a positive light. Nevertheless, folks, you know, by being merciful to the vicious, eventually you will become vicious to the merciful. And that's what's happening right now in Gaza. That's what's going to be happening tomorrow in Lebanon, in the West Bank, in Syria, in Jordan, in Egypt, Iraq, Iran. And eventually, when the Jews get their way and we see a nuclear war taking place between Russia and China and the United States and our own children, okay? Our own children are paying the price for it in the same way that those children in Gaza are paying the price for it, by having their buildings crumbling down around them and their brains being dashed against the rocks, then you will see why being merciful to the vicious eventually leads to you being vicious to the merciful. And then he ends his demonic diatribe, folks, and that is exactly what it is. You are listening to the words of Lucifer himself when you're listening to this. He says, the reality is that these terrorists weren't born today. They have been groomed for decades. And the world not only remains silent, but actually supports them. Well, in this case, folks, he's talking about the terrorists, quote unquote, of Gaza. But what he's really saying without realizing it is that what he's really talking about there are his own people. They weren't born today. They've been groomed to be like this for thousands of years, and the world not only remains silent of this fact, that they are a people who are driven by the protocols and the principles and the precepts of this Torah Judaism, which is a declaration of war against all humanity, that they have been groomed for decades, and not only does the world remain silent about this fact in recognizing and exposing Torah Judaism for this declaration of war that it, in reality it is, not only does the world remain silent about this fact, it actually supports them. And that's the truth, folks. That is the awful God's honest truth of the fact. And Jesus himself warned of this when he gave the predictions that he gave that were covered on the last program. And as well, when he said, when the Son of Man returns, will he find any faith left on earth? Meaning, will there be any vestige of the anti-rabbinic, anti-Judaic teachings that he gave his life in explaining to the rest of us? Will there be anything left of that? Will there be any awareness of the dangerous and the diabolical nature of Torah Judaism? Will there be anything left on earth? Well, yes, folks, there will be. Right here on this website, right here on this program, even if it's only being listened to by three people. So that's it for today's program, folks. Let's see, we are coming up on just about an hour and 45 minutes. So yeah, it's about twice as long as last week's. I hope that it was a profitable use of your time. Again, I try to, this is why I don't, you know, throw two or three programs out a week, folks. If you're going to give me an hour of your time, or however long it happens to be, I want to make sure that it's a good investment on your part. I want to make sure that I can put something together that makes sense and that will be good food for thought for you later, that hopefully you will pass along to other people for their benefit as well. So, again, folks, a happy new year. May this be the year, finally, folks, that the last piece of this puzzle is put into place, and that sane, rational, moral, God-fearing people all around the world come to understand the fact that there can be no compromise, there can be no peaceful coexistence with this dark energy that has bubbled up from the netherworld, nor can there be any peaceful coexistence with those who live by the sword and who embrace this backwards ideology. So until we meet again, folks, stay safe, stay smart, and pray for a miracle, because we certainly need it.